From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of July, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will join us from the road. He's traveling on Interstate 29 after being across a good portion of the Western Corn Belt and will join us to discuss what he's seen and what the weather forecast looks like, not only for that part of the world, but the rest of the Corn Belt. Will also check in on some things that might be coming about for the Southern Hemisphere as they inch closer to the beginning of their growing season. That won't happen for a month and a half or two at the moment, but there are some things, he says, to watch already. And we'll do all of that on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at $5.47, down 11 cents. December off 11 and a quarter at 5.44 and a quarter. And March contract at 5.53 and a quarter, down 11. August soybeans, 19 and a half lower, $14.14 and three quarters. The settlement price, November at 13.49 and a quarter, down 28 and a half. Bean meal down 3.90 for the day. Bean oil, $1.11 lower at 65.82 on the afternoon. And December wheat at 7.13 for the soft red, three quarters of a cent lower. Live cattle futures for the day were lower, down 95 cents. Feeders off 15 and hogs down 95 cents too. Mike Zuzlow, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us on a Friday to discuss what happened in Chicago. Everybody is holding their breath, hoping that today, at least for both the corn and the soybean markets, is just simply into the month. What do you think that trade really represents?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of two things, I think, Todd. Either the grains are a canary in the coal mine for the end of the inflation trade, the end of the Fed easy monetary policy trade, the end of the ethanol policy trade, and in significant issues that are longer term that will probably bleed over into the equities markets and the overall financial markets. While I don't have a stockbroker's license, I still look at the futures for the S&P 500. So I think it could be either that, or I think it could be, and I'm hoping and thinking that it's more the nervousness of the Delta variant of COVID is something that is very significant in the trade's minds. And it corresponded with the IMF coming out this week. And I thought they gave us a real gem and a real pearl when it came to commodities. They said that the economic prospects have diverged more, and even more so than what happened in April in their last update. And they said that prospects for the emerging market and developing economies have been marked down or lower in terms of growth. And that's especially true for their expectations for emerging markets in Asia. To me, the emerging markets in Asia almost equates to commodity investment and commodity demand. So I think we are seeing at the end of July, end of the month, and in some cases the end of the fiscal year for some people, some companies, a pulling off of positions because of the fear that the COVID mandates around the world will increase just when we start school up again and start colleges up again, and we'll be right back in the soup going into the fall. And I think that was something that I think we'll know relatively soon whether that's the case. But regardless of which is correct, I think it's safe to say after this week and last, we're not trading weather. We're not trading declining crop conditions, and we're not trading the worst spring wheat yield since the tour, that the quality tour started back in 1993.
So we're not trading any of those things. So we're trading, in part, the virulence of the Delta variant, I suppose, the ability of it to spread so quickly, and then, of course, what that means in the broader rest context of the rest of the economy and how quickly it begins to slow down.
Yeah, and the reason I'm taking the ethanol issue, that Corn Ethanol Mandate Elimination Act that we found out about late last week, you and I talked at length about last Friday, is because Senator Grassley gave an interview to normal Tuesday morning, I think it was, interview to the press, and he said, quote, "It's got no chance of passing." And so if he's got what it takes to, you know, forecast correctly where this bill sits, then the ethanol issue should not be a concern in terms of lost demand. And so in the Fed policy this week, it came out on Wednesday, and we had to digest it on Thursday. They continue to say the path of the economy continues to depend upon the course of the virus as well. So all these things linked together make me think that you're just pulling money onto the sidelines again, especially given that emerging markets in Asia are likely to get more hit from the COVID rearing its head again.
I like how Scott Irwin usually terms this, and I have not seen it from him in his Twitter account at the moment, but I've been busy and not up on Twitter to see if he made a comment about Mr. Grassley. But usually what he says is the deal is Senator Grassley rules, and in ethanol, whatever he says is the rule.
So. Yeah. And I remember that right before Pat Roberts retired, Senator Roberts retired, I met him for a second or third time. And he said, I go into Senator Grassley's office and he says, "I drink ethanol in the morning for breakfast. Would you like to join me?" And so, I mean, that's the kind of, you know, horsepower. When he says something, people really take it at face value, including myself.
Yeah. So the one thing is that it is there. And regardless of whether it passes or not, it quite likely puts down the gauntlet again as the current RFS comes into a second phase. Actually, there are several phases of it, but kind of a final phase where ethanol and other bio and renewable fuels simply come under not quite the mandate they were, but under the auspices of whether EPA can change the amount that is moving through the system based on what it sees as the economic and environmental impacts across the board. That would happen, I want to say, in 2022. It may be 2023, but soon enough. So we're at that point, an inflection point for the corn market as it relates to ethanol. Why? Because, well, you and I both know that it takes up around 30-35% of the corn that's produced in the United States.
Yeah, and I think this goes and dovetails into the pretty poor weekly export sales. We saw the weekly ethanol data show a decline in production, yet we're seeing an increase in supplies again. And I'm really starting to question how much we're actually blending right now, given the fact that we saw big drawdowns in the unleaded gas. I want to say that unleaded gas stocks are down to the lowest since either March or May at this stage. And so I think there's just several things on the demand side of the equation, that the fact that Iowa went up 3 points in their severe drought category versus last week, Minnesota went up 10 points in their extreme drought versus last week, and North Dakota went up 8 points in their extreme drought versus last week. I think these supply weather issues, and then I think one of the greatest things that was said this week that kind of solidified the supply side was when the ADM CEO, Mr. Luciano, said in his conference call that globally they think 15 million tons of crop production had been lost due to weather in the past 2 to 3 weeks. So I just don't buy into the idea that we've got weather premium in this market. It's more demand fear and COVID fear.
In fact, in a July 22 discussion that the current chief economist for USDA had with the rest of the agency, he made that suggestion that there wasn't a lot of weather premium in the market, that there was an awful lot of demand built into the market. So I suppose there could be upside left here.
I think August is the month to show us whether the beans can lead the show. My crop tour that I did this past weekend through Missouri and Illinois and the very fringes of western Indiana really show that the beans are really in trouble compared to the corn in all the states that I visited. And I would say there's a strong 25% of the bean fields in all those states that are going to have a very tough time even getting an average yield at this stage, especially given the weather pattern we've had this past week. If you didn't get rain, like in Centralia or in Flora, over the like Sunday morning when I was out, I just had to shut it down because they got so much rain in some of these pockets. But you've got some real issues in the soybeans, and I think Eastern Missouri's got some real issues in the corn because of the variability of the crop size and the late plantings and the holes, and that may not be known for a while. But I think August equals beans to me, and if we're going to build a weather premium, I would think the soybeans would want to be the ones that would lead the show, and wheat won't fight it, I don't think, because of the fact of what we saw in the spring wheat tour and the fact that the hard red and the soft red are following the spring wheat at this stage.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend, Todd.
Oh, you too. That's Mike Zuzlow. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's check now with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions into Agribull to see what the weather forecast looks like across the Corn Belt. In fact, he's been traveling across the Corn Belt on the road on Interstate 29 at the moment, I take it?
Yeah, I left Omaha this morning. I'm getting my way towards St. Joseph right now and got a good look at the crop coming across a big portion of the western Corn Belt. And I'll tell you something. You know, parts of Iowa, which have been really dry, all right, most of the crop there looks good. And I got talking to some growers, and they said, you know, the unique thing about this drier time period is we've not been getting the moisture from the rain. It's instead been coming from these relatively thick early morning dews. And we've seen that in Illinois too, haven't we, Todd? And so what's happened here is that this moisture is still getting into this crop and looks okay. But there's some pockets through here where things don't look quite as happy as you get farther to the west. And I felt like that drive from Omaha toward Kansas City was one of those areas where we've had some trouble.
Yeah, so you're in one of the wettest areas, not the driest areas of the Corn Belt. They got those big rains in the month of June.
Yeah. And you can see it in the beans. What's interesting is that I drove through a lot of areas where the beans did not appear that they had kind of filled in the canopy yet. And I was surprised to see that. I mean, we're almost to August. So, yep, I think you're right about that one.
Everything survived the heat all right that you've seen?
You know, it did an okay job with the heat. And I think it was mainly because up until the last few days, the overnight lows didn't get into that dangerous territory of, you know, like mid-70s and stuff like that. And as a result, I think overall, we're going to see that we got through it okay.
What's it look like where you are at St. Joe?
Very hazy. That's the interesting thing about the weather. That wildfire smoke is all over the place here. When I left Omaha, you know, you could still see, you know, the issues here. And for being as wet as it was, that corn is standing straight up. Every leaf is just pointing right toward the sky because we're still in that pocket where it's really hot right through here.
Oh, I had not realized that. I thought you cooled off there or that part of the world like we did today, which we should only get to about 80 degrees today. It is a fairly nice cool off. That's not as widespread as I thought.
Well, those heat advisories extend from right about here all the way down to the Gulf Coast, and they're going to get the cool off, but it's just going to be a little bit longer coming. They're going to have to wait on some of the rains that went through South Dakota last night, and they're going to go through Omaha this morning and cut through Iowa, Missouri, and possibly clip western Illinois. That's what we got in terms of near-term precipitation on its way. But, you know, they got to wait a little bit longer. So, yeah, it's kind of gross here right now where places I just came from are looking much better.
Yeah, you said that the Dakotas, South Dakota picked up rain. That's one of the drier areas.
Oh, it sure is. And I was in a meeting this morning where I had a guy raise his hand, about 200 in the crowd. And I said, how much rain you got? He raised his hand. We got 3/4 of an inch and it's still raining. And I tell you something, that guy was about as happy as I've ever seen a farmer just telling me that he had 3/4 of an inch of rain because, you know, South Dakota, I drove I-90 and I'll tell you, the crop there looks stressed. And it looked green, but it still looked stressed overall. And so, yep, they were happy to be seeing some of that rainfall coming into that area this morning.
Well, what's next across the Corn Belt?
Well, we have this cooler stretch coming up, and it's going to last around here for quite a while. And I'm going to tell folks, you know, farming or not farming, just enjoy this, right? Because, I mean, we often don't get this kind of cooler stretch of weather at this point at the end of July and early August. And all the heat's going to go back to the west and run up the west coast of North America. But like all good things, it will come to an end, and we do expect that ridge to open up as we get into that first full week of August toward the end of it, and we'll see some warmer conditions build back into the first into the western Corn Belt and then across the rest of the Corn Belt. Here's the thing, though, Todd. We're not shutting down any of the moisture. it's coming from both the crop and it's coming from the Gulf. So I expect that even though we'll go into a drier next 5 to 7 days, while it's cooler, we're going to see more storms returning once we get past, you know, August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And those storms are going to be isolated, locally heavy rainfall. But that's the way I see things kind of shaking down here as we get into that first week of August.
Once we get to mid-August and into September, what happens?
Well, if you took the weather forecast models at face value, they say keep the warmth in place, so warmer than average, but make it storm like mad. The European model just wants to keep the Gulf of Mexico flow of moisture open. And it appears that we could have, some stormier days throughout the month of August, which, if it hits these soybean fields and helps the grain fill with corn, could be a very positive thing for us here in our part of the Midwest.
Other parts of the world you've been keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I'm watching carefully what's going on in the Central Pacific because you and I have been talking. We've seen some indications of La Nina development this fall. Now, what that translates into for us, if we can steer clear of any tropical system coming up the gut of the Mississippi, we tend to have a drier harvest. But where it could be an issue is delaying the onset of the Brazilian monsoon, which delays planting, and we have a fresh memory of what that did to them last year. So I think that's probably the key thing to be watching for a lot of folks as we work our way toward harvest time period.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and AgriBolt. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report and helped us wrap up this Friday edition of the program. Don't forget, you should stay with us if you can for the rest of the hour on our home station. We'll hear all of Commodity Week on many of these radio stations. You'll hear that over the weekend. Our panelists for the week included Steve Fried, Chip Nellinger, and Dave Chatterton.